today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey, Jim, how was your drive back from Detroit?
It was mostly good, you know, until we got stuck in that backup in Breezewood.
Oh, yeah. We've all been there.
Okay, Patrick, it's part two of my Motown adventure.
Yes, happy to be here.
So I went to Detroit recently, went to the Motown Museum. I also stopped off at Jack White's Third Man Records while I was there.
You bought a few choice items. I saw them upstairs.
I did. I got some good stuff, including they have the rights to some of the Tamla Records 45. So I got Barrett Strong's Money, which was, I think, the first single released by Berry Gordy, like officially, his labels.
Got
right?
it.
Now, did you know this? Let me ask you this. You probably knew this already because you're smarter than I am in many ways. But there was Motown Records, there was Tamla Records, there was like Soul Records, there was Gordy Records. Yeah. There were a lot of different imprints that were under the
same umbrella.
Right.
Yeah.
And I guess I've always wondered, like, why do record labels do that? Why do they have like offshoots and things like that? So one explanation I have heard was the idea of like dividing it by genre, which makes sense, right?
So that makes sense.
Each label sort of has a personality to it. I get that. But what they explained on this Motown Museum tour was that there was some limits on radio stations on how many songs they could play from a single label in
that makes sense too.
You know, per day or whatever.
Yep.
I'd never heard that before. So if you just started new labels, you could get more of your product.
Right.
Put her on the radio, right?
Yeah. That's interesting. I hadn't heard that before. Yeah.
So there you go.
And I think publishing probably had something to do with it too, right?
Probably.
When they're dividing up songwriting credits and things like that.
All right, so this is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And this is going to be part two of the interview with Paul Barker. Paul is the director of development for the Motown Museum, and he sat down with me, and we talked for 35, 45 minutes, something like that.
Yeah, it was great.
And if you missed part one, go back and listen to that yesterday. Talks a lot about sort of the origins of Motown and that kind of thing and what it means to the city. And, you know, and the other thing, too, we talked about yesterday sort of how kind of amazing the whole story is, because there were a lot of regional independent labels back then in the, you know, started, this one started in 59, but really was an early 60s kind of success story. A lot of regional labels, but not too many that had like this many hits. You know, and you gotta remember, this was an independent label at that time, and it just exploded. It sort of took
absolutely.
off, and to be run by an African-American, extremely rare, right? I don't know if that
certainly one of
had
the happened for, most pioneering African American businessmen, I think, in American
absolutely.
History, for sure.
So amazing. I mean, in fact, about 10 years later, when Gamble and Huff started their label in Philadelphia, it was all basically to like emulate what Berry Gordy did with Motown, you know? Okay, so in this part of the interview, Paul talks a lot more about sort of like this, that societal factors of Motown and culture and things like that, and also gets into some stories about famous people who still sort of worship Motown and come around to visit the museum from time to time.
Reflections of the way life used to be. Reflections of the love you took from me. Oh, I'm all alone now. No love to shield me. Trapped in a world that
the museum definitely touches on this, is how important the music was to what was happening in the 60s. Yet until sort of the end of the decade or the beginning of the 70s, the music wasn't overtly about messages of, you know, social impact, social justice, social change, whatever. It rarely, if ever, you know, touched on those themes at all. But there was yet something important about it that helped America change in some ways.
I think that's what's key. I think sometimes you have to ask yourself that age-old question, what came first, the chicken or the egg? Is it the music that had message that inspired people to change, or was that people found commonality with people they saw as different in music.
Right.
And I think history will show it's the latter. I think when you look at the era, the 60s, and you see an African-American man and a white man, and who may not come from the same neighborhoods or have anything in common, not go to the same school, nothing, but they both love the Temptations, and they both love the song My Girl. You know, they'll both look at each other and say, well, if you like that and I like that, then that means that we're not too much different. So right. If you like that, what else do you like that I might like? And it kind of gave people that non-tangible opportunity to break down the walls and see what's on the other side. And so I wonder, when you look at it, did the music change people, or did people change because of the music? Either way, right. Motown was instrumental in that change, but I think both are have a little bit of credibility there, both ways of seeing it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly it. I think people look back to the integration of professional sports as an example of a way that America sort of started to come together. But that integration of music, that idea that it was no longer about crossover artists, it was just artists. But Motown seemed to almost immediately have this kind of universal appeal to it, and I'm sure it grew over time. Mm-hmm.
Well, Berry Gordy will tell the story that Motown wanted to create music for all people. Mm-hmm. They didn't see black and white. They just wanted to make good music, and they wanted people to enjoy it. And that is what they could contribute. You know, in Berry Gordy's book, he talks about in the very early days, listening to the radio when Max Schmeling was knocked out by mm-hmm. Joe Louis.
Yep.
And he saw his father cry, and the neighborhood was celebrating. And it was everyone. It was black and white. And he looked at this powerful moment, and he was like, what could I do in my life that would make this many people feel that good? And it had nothing to do with black and white. It had nothing to do with German and American, that fight. It was about finding identity of yourself, like a commonality. Like, he, you know, was black, like Joe Louis was black, you know, and it didn't matter that this champion, who was an American at that point, you know, so it was a bigger picture.
Right.
And people, he wanted to do something that was that great and make people feel that good. And you have to admire that, because he knew that success was bred from talent and endurance and self understanding and self identity. Somebody like Joe Louis having all of that, he knew who he was, he knew what he was doing, and he was doing it because he loved it. And Berry Gordy wanted to do something similar. But then that's just Berry Gordy's piece. You have to have all of the artists and mm-hmm. songwriters, staff members, executives, everyone on every level wanting to have that same ambition in life. And that's what moved everything forward. It's not just a one-man story. It's a Motown story. And those successes, there's just countless examples of it. And I think that's one of the reasons it becomes known as an American success story.
You must see in the visitors who come to the museum that diversity, right? I mean, that sort of universal appeal to what this music means.
Yes, we're laughing because we were walking through the other day with, I think it was when Demi Lovato was visiting.
Yeah.
And there were some guests standing there, and we could tell that they weren't American. Sometimes you just get used to looks, you know? And so we asked where they were from, and the gentleman was like, I'm from Holland. And he introduced us to his family members. And he goes, I came here because my parents named me Jermaine after Jermaine Jackson and the Jackson 5. And he goes, so I just wanted to see what that was about. And I was like, that's just one more example. Just a random person out of the crowd that you pick, and they have their own story.
Yeah.
So... And I see that a lot. Like, I've met at least 4 or 5 people named Tamla, which was the Motown label, you know, the Miracles were on, including right. Smokey Robinson's daughter, who's named Tamla. And they credit that name choice back to the identity of that record label in association to it. So it's unique, the kind of people who come here and the reasons they have for coming here. Andrew Lloyd Webber is a great story. Wanted to ask him kind of what his Motown story was. You know, you always want to hear like who somebody's favorite was. And he had a whole different aspect that I never thought about. He said that growing up in England, he would see performers, and they kind of stood there and sang. that was pretty much it. He said, but when Motown came, they had these matching dresses and they had these matching suits and they had this choreography. He said it was the first, it wasn't the first time, excuse me. He said it was that moment that Motown spoke to him theatrically. He could see music in a visual way, mm-hmm. a performance way. And that was an inspiration to him in his theatrical productions. So it manifests itself in different ways. So it wasn't like he had a favorite song. Right. It was an image. It was a view. It was a performance that spoke to him.
Who are some of the other famous musicians who have visited here?
It's endless list of people. Famous people who visited here. Beyonce came a couple of years ago while on tour. You caught me off guard. Andy Cohen, the talk show host on Bravo. As I mentioned, Demi Lovato was here. We also had, I'm just trying to think of the recent ones.
Oh, yeah.
But Bruno Mars.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, that makes sense.
Frequent visitor.
Yeah.
The Motown artists, like Dinah Ross, believe it or not, Smokey Robinson, Stevie Wonder.
They still come back?
Dinah Ross comes back all the time. No announcements, no holding of people. She'll just come and walk with everybody else.
Wow.
I'll tell you the most stunning celebrity visit I remember was many years ago. It was, I want to say it's 1998 or 1999, but Stevie Wonder came to the Motown Museum with Michael Jackson.
Oh.
And we had a policy then. We didn't close. You just kind of went through with everybody else, mm-hmm. you know, and maybe their folks would keep people a little away, but we came through. When they came through, the first thing they did was wanted to go to the studio. So we walked through the video room that exists today, and Stevie Wonder was being escorted, with Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson had Stevie Wonder on his arm, and they walked through the crowd that was watching the video and straight into the back studio door. And after the studio door closed, the entire crowd erupted laughing.
I'm sure.
Because they thought it was two impersonators.
Right, right, right.
And that continued the whole time. It wasn't until the people left the building that they saw like 40 news trucks out front, police cars, and a crowd of people. They were like, oh my God, that was really Stevie Wonder and Michael Jackson.
Yeah, you wouldn't think that would be the case. Yeah.
You wouldn't think that you had just paid $15 to come in and you're watching an introduction video and Michael Jackson and Stevie Wonder walk in front of you. Because you've been in that room. You see that room is like, what, 12 feet by like 12 feet.
Right, something like that.
It's
tiny. Yeah.
And so that was probably one of the more moving moments. And then just hearing them talk about their stories and recording there and things of that nature. It's pretty fun.
Oh, what a great place to work, huh?
It is. It's a surprise every day. Every day is something new because we have just different people coming in every day from everywhere. It's an amazing stopping spot for everyone in the world. In fact, I'm trying to remember the name of the magazine, but somebody listed, they did a study and they listed the Motown Museum as the number one international tourist destination in the state of Michigan. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that people will come to Michigan with the expressed purpose of coming to see Hitsville, USA and Motown Museum. So they might go see other places and might do other things, but they, you know, on their travel around the country, they stopped in Michigan because they wanted to see Motown. And that's a big thing to say. You know, that's a big thing to hear because you know you got something to live up to and you've got to treasure that that love. Reflections of the way life used to be. Reflections of the love you took from me. And you are all my faith and trust right before my eyes. That story about Stevie Wonder and Michael Jackson.
Mind-blowing.
It's one of the funniest things I've ever heard.
I know.
That's just amazing, isn't it? Could you imagine?
I would be one of those people like, look at those imitators, man. These guys are the worst.
But that's what you would think. That's exactly what you would think. It makes perfect sense, but it's insane.
Hilarious.
So I mentioned yesterday that there's not a ton of artifacts at the museum. It's all the museum is basically an artifact of itself.
The vibe.
Now, they are working on an expansion where they're going to be collecting more artifacts and things like that. But some of the artifacts I did see that they have on display... Speaking of Stevie Wonder and Michael Jackson, let me just tell you this. They have one of Stevie Wonder's harmonicas. that he played on Fingertips.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was cool.
That's very cool.
It's big, too.
Really?
Yeah. And then they also have, now tell me if you remember this. Okay. Back in the 80s, there was a TV special, was the Motown 25th anniversary special, yeah, right?
Very much.
It was a big sort of extravaganza concert special.
Diana Ross looked ravishing that night.
And they have from that special, Michael Jackson's fedora and sequin glove.
Oh, nice.
Okay?
That's very cool.
Now, the significance of that, the true significance of that, and I remember watching this live as it happened. That's when he debuted the moonwalk.
Oh, is that right? I didn't know that.
He was singing Billie Jean. He did the moonwalk. It, you know, it's only like a few seconds where that move happens. Yeah. But and back then we didn't have like, you know,
rewind
buttons and things like that. It was one of those things that happened and you couldn't believe your eyes when you saw it. Like, it didn't seem like a real move. Like, how could that, it seemed to go against physics, right? Now we all just, you know, the moonwalk, whatever. But back then it was like the weirdest thing when you saw it, when you saw somebody do that. So anyway, so that was all cool stuff. All right. We have one more part of this interview tomorrow. More about plans for the Motown Museum and other initiatives that they have and sort of how to keep it current today. And Paul talks a little bit about that. And he also lets us hear a little bit about who he thinks was the greatest Motown artist.
Yeah, that's cool too.
So that was good. All right. You should listen again tomorrow.
Every single day.
And every day. Mm-hmm. The show is Rockin' the Suburbs. Find us on the big podcast platforms. And please, if you could, rate and review the show.
That would help.
On the Apple Podcasts. And also tell us what you think about Motown. If you have some favorite songs, please. What have you. We would love to hear that.
Yes, please.
You can email us, rock@suburbspod.com. You can call us and leave a message, 612-440-1984.
Or
you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Suburbs Pod. And as we go, I think we should play out. We mentioned Michael Jackson, Billie Jean, but let's go back to the earlier stuff and let's hear a little bit of Jackson 5. All right. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Glass.
We'll talk to you tomorrow. Should also please, if you could, what's wrong with me?